All right. And welcome back to Unapologetically Black Unicorns. Yay! It's always so exciting. And why am I excited? Because I have a wonderful, splendiferous, fantastic guest who's joining me, and we are just getting to know each other, and I'm just so happy to have her here. Let me just tell you about our first meeting. It was with Disability Rights California at a meet and greet sort of happy hour situation. And there's this beautiful Black woman with a crown on her head. And I was like, wait, she's wearing a crown. Wait, she's got a sash. Like, okay, she's a queen of something. I have to know who this person is. And so I would like to, and I touched the crown, by the way, just so y'all know. But anyway, so who am I talking about? I am talking about Candace Welch. So Candace, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hey, thank you for having me on here. I'm super excited to be here. And yes, you touched my crown. I am the 2023 Miss Wheelchair California. I wear that proudly. And but before all of the crown and all of the sash, I am Candace, an advocate. I am a daughter, a friend. I am someone that loves to get lost in a foreign land. That's behind all of the makeup and the dresses.
Wow, okay. Well, I have never met a queen in person, so I was very, very impressed by the crown, and I kept asking, do you get to keep the crown? Like, what happens? Like, you never hear the behind the scenes things of these kind of things. So that was really, really kind of cool for me to learn about not just the crown part, but let's talk a little bit about what does that mean when you say that you're Miss Wheelchair of California? Like, what does that really mean?
For me, it means that I am a resource. I am a woman that is an advocate, and I'm a woman that wants to see more women that look like me and have the same or similar life struggles as me see someone, you know, thriving. That's what the crown means to me, is mm-hmm. a representation that we are beautiful women, we are strong women, we are leaders, we are successful, and there's beauty in that, and that should be honored. So that's what the crown means to me, is really being the representation that as a little girl I didn't get to see.
Mm-hmm. And how do you also integrate that with being a woman of color? Like, is that also ensuring that, you know, other little girls of color, other African-American little girls get to see, you know, someone who looks like them in so many different ways, flourishing and achieving and doing whatever the heck they want to do with their life and being a badass and all that kind of fun stuff? Is that what it means too?
Oh, yes. I mean, I grew up looking at women in magazines that did not look like me. I mean, obviously we have similar complexions and things like that, but I didn't see a lot of Black beauty queens. And, you know, we all know what happened with the ones that did make it, you know, so it hasn't been a very good historical, you know, experience for us. And so I really take this on as being from a very diverse state. I wanted the title holder to look and be reflective of a diverse community. Mm-hmm. And so being a Black queen, having the crown and being able to have that platform, that means something, because mm-hmm. I'm not just your regular girl. I am a Black educated woman who has defied any and all obstacles that has placed me in this position at this moment to be a resource for the many young women that are coming right behind me, but especially for those that, you know, got that melanin.
Yeah, got that melanin. Snap, snap, clap, clap. I hear you. I think there is something about, I always say representation matters, and I think it doubly, triply, whatever, how many times you want to say, matters for people of color to be able to see themselves represented in all walks of life. So when you actually went to school, initially you studied public relations? Help me kind of understand a little bit. your education?
I'm a J school graduate, journalism school to the heart. I went to Cal State Northridge, which is a local state college, and they had one of the best public relations programs at, you know, at the time. And I fell in love. As a kid, I fell in love with writing. I could always write poetry very well. It came very natural. And then news, still to this day, I'm such a nerd. Like, I find it very calming to sit with a glass of wine and watch CNN and look at the spectators on the TV and try to figure out what's going on with our world. So I was always into media and news. And so I decided to co-pursue journalism and kind of pivoted toward public relations. I was 20. It was fun. It was a lot of, you know, nights out, celebrities, you know, it was perfect time for my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But I pivoted to government because I knew that my disabled body would not withstand the rigors of entertainment. And, you know, what people see on TV is all beauty, but behind the scenes, it's work to make that look like that. And
mm-hmm.
I was on the work side of things, you
mm-hmm.
know, so I knew my body couldn't withstand that too long. And I needed medical insurance. So I was like, I gotta be a grown up and really try to get, as my friends and family would say, the straight job lane. So I went government. I absolutely did not want to do it. I was just like, no, I can fight this. I can be the exception in the entertainment industry. I can be the one that makes it, even with my wheelchair. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to go get a stable check and get some health care.
Mm-hmm.
And it changed my life from that point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going into government opened my eyes to a new world of policy and procedures and advocacy, and it changed my life.
So is that what sort of moved you towards doing more in the advocacy activism space? Yeah, me too. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. When I was working in, when I started in government, I was bored out of my mind because I was doing like data entry. And I was like, this can't be it. This can't be what I'm doing for the rest of my life. Like, there has to be something more. And so I started, you know, looking, what can I do in this sector? And my boss at the time was starting this new program that was the Government Alliance for Racial Equity. And so I was like, oh, okay, like, this might be something cool to like do. And I fell in love with this new term, DEI. And I was like, oh, this is just social justice and human rights, but with a workplace spin on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, but nobody's talking about disability.
Mm-hmm.
No, everyone's talking about race, sexuality, gender. I know every pronoun, but I don't know how to talk to people who may have a different form of communication. I don't know, you know, what the ADA and what that means in the workplace for reasonable accommodations. And this is everyday life for people. So when I saw that void, I'm like, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to do. And it just spearheaded from lived experience and a passion to be resourceful and be the representation.
Wow. Wow. And you went back and you got a certificate, right? Like a DEI certificate. In that program, did they talk about disability or accessibility?
No, they in the DEI certificate program, no, they did not call it out. I had to take, they did have a course about accessibility and inclusion with disability lens. And I did take that course, but it wasn't in the actual DEI program. So it's coming around,
yeah.
You know, it's coming around. But even before I did my certificate program, for DEI, I went back and got my master's in public administration. I just always knew I had to achieve more. I could not stop at a bachelor's if I wanted to run my race. I couldn't stop at a bachelor's because I knew that if you look at me, and this is just the sad truth about corporate America. If you look at me and you look at my resume, oh, you'll hire me on the spot because I'm that good. I have a resume that's that good. But when I roll up in there, you're going to see, oh, she's black. She's in a chair. And it's not like a little chair, it's a big chair. And you're going to look at that resume and be like, no, thank you. So I had to come with everything I got. I did so many internships. I did so many externships so that when you got my resume, all you could say was, when can you come in?
That's such an amazing story. It feels kind of sad in a way, even though it's you got to do twice as much, three times as much, four times as much. Similarly, I do list my degrees after my name. And I did that when I worked in peer services, when no matter what my role was in peer services, whether I was running an organization program, working at the program, it didn't matter. I listed those degrees, and many people said, well, you're not really a peer if you list the degrees. And I said, I work for those degrees. Some of them I paid for, thank you very much. Some of them, one of them I was scholarship, but the majority of them I paid for. I'm proud of them. They speak to, yes, book knowledge, but I can use that book knowledge along with the lived experience knowledge to really do whatever it is I want to do here. I don't think it makes anybody less of anything, but it's not about that. It's about the person who's going to read it, who is going to make some kind of determination about what I have the ability to do. And I have an invisible disability, but I have blackness that is not invisible. I have come with the resume. I will tell you, girl, I have come with the resume. I've been on the phone. I would have an initial phone interview. Yes, come on in. We just love to meet you. I come in and they kind of look at the resume. They look at me. They look at the resume. They look at me. And it's like, okay, something's not jiving. And I have had this happen once where the person looked at me, looked down at the resume, looked at me. Are you Karis? And I said, yes, I'm Karis Myrick. I'm here for the interview. And they told me, oh, the job is filled. Now, you know that job was not filled. They did not expect a black woman to come up in there. And I think my middle name throws off people because it has umlauts over it because I was born in Germany. And so they expected something else. And when the black person came in, that is not what they wanted, sadly, no matter what the resume said. So I think people think it's just not that bad. It can't be that bad.
It is very bad. I've been in interviews where they say, oh, would you be really great at like fetching coffee? And I'm like, excuse me? Fetching coffee? Honey, no, I don't fetch anything. I'm not a dog, number one. Number two, I don't fetch anything because I paid well over the amount that I should have for all of my degrees. I'm not fetching nothing. And don't assume because I'm in a wheelchair, oh, it's just so easy for you to get around. No, honey, stop it. Stop it with the microaggressions because this interview is going to turn left real quick and you're going to have whiplash. But it's really aggressive like that. And I don't think, and I have similar experiences. My name, Candace Welch, it's not a black cultured name. And then when I talk on the phone, I have a professional tone. So they're expecting something different. And then when I roll up in there, hey, they're like, oh, no.
It is usually like, whoa, oh, hello. You can tell the person is caught off guard because they're kind of like, oh, hello, like this skiff, right? And it's like, and I like to go back, hello to you. Like, I'm shocked you're what you are, like, even though I'm not, right? Nothing ever shocks me. I don't know what I'm going to meet, and I don't care what I'm going to meet. But anyway, so talk a little about like travel. Like, where do you like to travel?
Okay, so my love language is Mexico or Mexico. I love to go there at least once a year. And I'm not talking just like Cabo, I'm talking about Jalisco, Tulum, Acapulco. But travel has always been something that I love. But what stops me, well, I shouldn't say stops me, but what gives me pause with travel is accessibility. I'm a wheelchair user, so everything is not always accessible, and especially when you're a power user, a power wheelchair user, that's a different level of accessibility. So I have to get creative, and I think that's a resilience trait within the disabled community. We have to be adaptable at any given moment. We can't, be stuck in the moment. You have to move within the moment. And so I always tell people, if you cannot move within the moment, you're not built for inaccessible travel, because at any given point, your whole day could be turned upside down because of one thing.
And I'm, gonna speak into it that I think the transportation industry could do so much better as far as accessibility, understanding how to support people who have support needs and accessibility needs. And I know the airlines and or the airports, I can't figure out which sometimes outsource these things to other companies, but even the other companies are not training the people how to support folks. And I was just on the plane the other day, and it was just shocking when they said, people with disabilities can board early, and it was like a chaotic, mad rush for people to do early boarding, including people in wheelchairs. And these were wheelchairs that had to be pushed by other people. And some of them were pushed by, maybe the support person or their family, and other people were just sitting there waiting for somebody to push them while everybody else just bum rushed the front. And I literally was like, hey, wait a minute. No, aren't wheelchairs supposed to go first? Because it kind of makes sense to get people down the ramp, give them time if they've got to transfer to a transfer aisle chair, if they need time to let the flight attendant know what support needs or instructions they may need while they're on the plane. Why is there this bum rush? And I thought, again, I am not the gatekeeper of people who have disabilities. I'm not the gatekeeper. I can't say you have one. I can't say you don't have one. What do I know? I don't know. But I have never seen anything like that. And I'm sitting there trying to figure out how, as people with disabilities, are we not conscious of what just happened?
We're conscious. I do believe that consciousness is not an issue. It's vocalism, because we see, like you said, the madness, we see the BS. You know how many times I fly, I've been flying pretty often, especially as Miss Wheelchair California. I've seen with my eyes and tell me, oh, well, we're gonna let people board first and then put you on after because that'll be easier. In what world sway is that easier? You're not gonna do that. I'm supposed to board first. Oh, well, I mean, we want to just get out of the gate on time. Do I look like I care? Because guess what? My flight purchase includes that get out the gate on time. And if I'm not on the flight, there's a problem. And you have to really be vocal. Even when the ticket agent is standing next to me, talking to me, good morning, how are you? I'm fine. Are you Candace? Yes. And then we'll go right to my who is sitting next to me. She doesn't know this is my nurse, but she just starts talking to this woman and saying, oh, well, what does she need? And what kind of support can we give her? And I just kind of directed her and said, ma'am, we were doing so fine. You and me were talking. I was answering. You were following up. We were having what we call a dialogue. Why did you interrupt our dialogue to go to someone else to talk about me? And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't think you'd be able to provide those answers. You should try. Don't assume. Try and then see what happens.
So when you're doing your work now, like your work now is DEIA, So A for accessibility, I
Yes.
guess. D for diversity, disability, equity, right? So the D can
Yes.
stand for a couple of things,
Yes.
right? Okay.
Yes.
Where do you do your work and how do you help people be intentional about these things in their work, in the culture of their organization? How do you help people get it?
I think it's a je ne sais quoi, I think, because not everybody has the gift. And I say it's a gift because it's not easy to do what I do. And what I do is go into businesses or organizations and I provide trainings on accessibility, disability, and I have about 10 trainings that I, shop out to different businesses. But I go in and facilitate these trainings. And I think it's just a bit different when you come in with lived experience, and people want that. Businesses want someone that has lived experience that's not giving them some book to read, but is really telling them, like, this is not acceptable. This is what we need to be working on. This is what we need to be focusing on. You have accessible buttons and signage throughout your business. When you're providing all these Zoom presentations, are you providing closed captioning? And are you doing what you need to do regarding ASL and screen readers? Is your business inclusive? Because if you're not including disability, then we're still at start. We have not started the race. We're still at go. And that's where I come in and say, let's get you on the board because you're in a negative space. You can't talk about race and gender and sexuality and leave out disability.
So let's talk a little bit about one other thing, and this is something I think we touched on previously, was what are your goals as far as advocacy is concerned? And what do you hope to achieve as Miss Wheelchair, right? Miss Wheelchair of California. That's one thing in the crown. I'm gonna fixate on that because I just think it's the coolest thing ever. I really do. But even broader than that, like what are some of your advocacy goals?
My advocacy goals, I would say top three would be housing. I want to see more accessible units within traditional housing systems, and I want that to look like what it would be like, maybe bringing on a consultant within the disabled community to really speak toward what needs to be in an accessible unit. I'm not talking about compliance or permits. I'm talking about accessibility. So yeah, creating more accessible housing. I'm from California, so affordable housing, I don't even know if that's a thing anymore. I'm just going to work on the accessibility part at this point. And then I would say maybe number two, we got to get our people employed. The gap of employment from those with a disability to those without is just extremely significant. And if we're not able to employ individuals with disabilities, they're not able to get on the board of life. They're not, because they're living off of SSI, or and the checks are not up to standard to what a living wage would be, And so forget about if you want to just maybe go to dinner one night. I can't even afford to buy my groceries off of this income that they're giving me, So yeah, definitely equitable hiring practices, diversifying the way we recruit for individuals in positions. And then I say number one, care. For those who need care in home, at the workplace, I mean, Europe has it right. Europe has been doing some great things in the care providing stages, and America just has so far to go. Like, we need to pay our healthcare workers more. We need to pay our direct service providers more. And when I say direct service providers, I'm speaking to, like, caregivers, in-home care support services. These are the individuals that come into your home and help you start your day. Like, my nurse, if she does not show up, I'm in the bed. I'm not able to get out unless I find someone to come help me. So I need care and I need the funds to be able to pay that. And it all goes back into a loop. I need care. I need to be able to afford it. I need a job. That means I need to be able to be hired somewhere, you know? So, and then if you can hire someone and you can get the care, maybe you can have a home of your own and have some happiness within your life that you have a piece of something for yourself. Just the dignity of being a human being is what I'm fighting for.
Yeah, I really love how you articulated that. And I think it's probably clear to many of the listeners on the podcast, but if this goes beyond just our normal listeners, I'm not saying our listeners are normal or abnormal, but I'm trying
Your
to
regular,
say our regular
singular
listeners,
serious.
right? So for our regular listeners, if they send this off to someone else and say, hey, you need to listen to this, the other person may not be aware that, in California, for our SSI payments, in order to afford an efficiency, it would cost 153% of a person's SSI payment, monthly payment. So I don't know about anybody else, but I've never heard that you can earn money and have 153% more of that money. You only have 100% of that money. And then you said, you want to afford a dinner sometime, or maybe you want to go to the movies. Well, it's not possible.
Accessible.
So all of this is so out of whack, for a lack of better way of putting it, for people with disabilities to have, what we call, the whole life, health, home, purpose, community. How do you have that when it's not affordable to have it?
It's a system set up to put you down, but then make you feel as if you're worth nothing because you are down and that the government has to take care of you. But when you try to go and get employment, they tell you, oh no, you're making too much now. And now you can't have that job no more. And so I had to make a decision a long time ago, and I'll never forget it. I was sitting at the table at a park, and I just said, I'm either going to have to struggle for the rest of my life and stay on my benefits, or I'm going to take a leap of faith and get out here and get a job. And thankfully, I was in the position to be able to do that. Not all disabled people are able to do that, but I was in the position to, and I took a step out, and I've been working since I was full time working since I was, what, maybe 21. I did some part time work in undergrad, but like 21, I was like, oh no, I want to go on vacation. I can't do that with this. I gotta make money. And that's just the fact of life. You need money to buy things so that you can procure your health, procure your safety. If I can't make no money, I'm just out here. No.
It's really quite interesting, and I don't think the public in general understands how some of this works, especially the financial part for the person who has a disability and the things that they need. That in general, you're living in some level of percent of poverty, right?
Yeah, poverty is real within the disabled community. It really is.
And what does that do to our mental health? Because, well, we're going to talk like 2 seconds about our mental health, about sort of this intersection too of disability and mental health. And if the struggles, like if these are the day-to-day struggles of, well, what if somebody doesn't come, or and then I've got to rely on somebody else, or now I don't have money to go to the movies or whatever. It's not a woe is me. It's not a woe is me. It's a reality, but it's a reality that also impacts our mental health for the cycle that you spoke to, where, makes you feel like you're to blame because you can't get out of these things. But the things that you need to get out of them, they don't afford you to be able to do that. So I don't know. What are you finding?
And then when you go to the doctor and want to work on your mental health and you're disabled, they ignore it. Like, oh, it's fine. Just stay at home. You'll get over the depression soon.
Pick
Wait,
yourself
what?
up by those proverbial bootstraps. Yeah, thank you. No,
Yeah.
thank you.
Yeah. It's a very whacked system, as you said. Like, how can I raise myself up if you keep society, the barriers, the stereotypes, the attitudes, the policies, they systematically just and systemically just push us down.
Yeah.
It makes rising up like, I don't even want to try.
Yeah. But we're doing it. You're doing it.
Yes.
I'm glad we're, you know, yay on the Disability Rights California board together. Yes, I just dropped
yes.
that little piece of information right here in this podcast. I did. You know, so happy that you're joining us on the Disability Rights Board, so that these are some of the things that we can continue to tackle collectively with and for and by the disabled community. So yay, I'm just so excited about that.
I'm excited.
So we're gonna kind of come to our wrap up. And what I do when we're wrapping up is I ask our guests to do one last piece of wisdom dropping, because you've dropped tons of wisdom throughout this entire conversation. But if there's one thing that you want to leave our listeners with, what piece of wisdom would that be?
I would leave with a word: thrive. And I mean that with every intention, thrive, because they don't think we're able to thrive. So whatever you have to do, thrive. Don't give up. It's not going to be easy. I'm not going to even give you that sugarcoating of a narrative. It's going to be difficult. You're going to cry a lot. You're going to smile a lot. You're going to laugh a lot. You're going to get angry a lot. But throughout every one of those emotions, feel them and continue to thrive. Get back up, because the advocacy will not continue without you. Mm-hmm. You have to continue. And I'm not just talking about global advocacy. I'm talking about internal advocacy. You have to show up for yourself, mm-hmm. because you don't know who's watching. And what you do, someone can look at and be like, well, if they were able to make it through, if they were able to find a resource, then maybe I can. And that's my goal, just to give you that little ounce of faith, hope, to just get up and thrive. Try another day. Today was a bad day. Okay. Tomorrow will be a better day. And if it's not, okay. You can go through a storm, you can go through a thunderstorm or a light rain, but one day it's going to be sunny. So you got to get up to see the sunny day.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you so much. Looking for that sunny day. And we're all here to help you get there. So thank you
yes.
so much, Candace, for joining me on Unapologetically Black Unicorns.
Thank you for having me. I hope I'm a unicorn now.
You yes. are a unicorn. You were a unapologetically black unicorn before there was unapologetically black unicorns, because you have the crown. So what am I going to say? Like, when that crown is gone, I don't know what I'm going to talk about. I'm still going to talk about the crown, because you have the crown. You get to keep it, right?
I get to keep it and the sash.
There you go. She gets to keep the crown and the sash. So thank you. Thank you so much. And for our listeners, Garrett, the producer, always wants me to remind you to like, comment, subscribe. And what, of course, I want you to do, and well, as does he and as does everybody, is to make sure that you share these podcasts, because we never know who needs to hear the wisdom that was dropped. I think, as Candace said, maybe somebody's having a rainy day, maybe they're having a thunderstorm, and just listening to this podcast may help them be able to see that, ooh, look at that sun, it's peeking through. So please do share the podcast. And until next week, we'll see you on Unapologetically Black Unicorns. Thanks for joining in.